Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is Elder Pat Bumgardner, Executive Director of the Global Justice Institute. Pat, the mandate of the Global Justice Institute is enormous. What program were you able to expand?
We started a new program or a new relationship in Guyana with a group there, and we're looking forward to what that may lead to. Their chief interest there is to have a church that supports LGBT people. So eventually it may be an MCC project, but right now it's a global justice project in terms of laying the foundation. So I'm pretty excited about that. Mm-hmm. And in Kenya, we continued all the work that I've talked with you about before, including things like the retreat for LGBT friendly mm-hmm. pastors, but we also started a retreat for sex workers because where we're located in Metito Ande is a place where a lot of people trade sex for survival. And so we had a chance to bring people together to talk about not only safer ways to support their families, but also about engaging the opportunities we have on the land we have there. So, you know, we have a fully stocked fish pond, we have gardening plots. So just a chance to try to help people maybe transition their lives mm-hmm. a little bit. And we had a luncheon for children in need there. And we also did a parenting workshop for parents who are raising LGBT children. So, you know, those were all expanded things that we were able to do mm-hmm. Because people stepped forward to support that work.
Are there other new initiatives or ongoing successes that we haven't talked about yet?
Yes, I'm really happy to say that our work with Journalists for Tolerance in Belarus and Eastern Europe continues. And this past year, both sadly and in a good way, we were able to relocate two of those journalists to a safer location so that they don't, and their families, and to provide living support for them. And in one case, to get a grant to carry that on, and in another case, to find a sponsor so that those two individuals can continue doing their work without fear of ending up in prison or tortured or worse. So I feel like it's wrong to say proud of that, but I'm happy that we could do that. We are continuing to work with an attorney in Lithuania, and we hope this year that we'll finally be able to open an office on the ground in Lithuania, which will serve as the hub in Eastern Europe. And our plan is, if COVID allows, to show up in person for that opening and to conduct what we call a school for journalists who want to learn how to produce LGBT positive news coverage. We continue our partnership in Romania and funding a gay positive press website in Eastern Europe. So that was a new thing too. We're still working in Latin America and deepening our partnership with a group called Ecumenicus in Honduras, which works for cis and trans women's rights. And our plan is hopefully in this new year to open a fourth on-site location there so that we could actually have a person on the ground operating for global justice there. We continue to work for reproductive rights in Latin and Central America. And in Mexico, we were actually able to give a presentation on human rights and sexual reproductive rights to the Congress there. So that was kind of a big deal for us. We've explored a relationship with a Palestinian human rights group that's still in the works.
We've seen authoritarians continue to consolidate power in different parts of the world. How are you able to respond to those kinds of tactics, if at all?
Well, we do respond, actually. I mean, and what you have noted is, I think in the last couple of years, a switch in their tactics in the sense of using the language of human rights mm-hmm. as a reason to discriminate or to pass anti-trans laws or to block education. And I think it's very, very serious because it's part of this, what I view as this whole bigger movement in the United States that is squashing whatever part of the truth we can tell, presenting something that isn't true, that, you know, for example, that we have always been a white country and we need to return to that, or we have always been a nuclear family country and we need to return to that, or it's our right to treat trans people as if they're dirt, you know. Mm-hmm. It's our right to keep trans kids from participating in sports, you know. I mean, it's very alarming. And so mostly what we've been able to do is just speak out, you know, issue statements, sign on to amicus briefs when they reach court level cases, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to be sure that you have mentioned all of the people that you see as marginalized people at particular risk.
Well, one of the things that, in terms of global justice, that I feel particularly concerned about and also stifled around doing anything about is what has been happening in Afghanistan, and particularly northern Afghanistan, and the level of suffering there. And I've, you know, I've signed on to a few things and tried to push a few things, but it's very hard to affect any real change there. And I know everybody knows the stories, but, you know, the one that really has stuck with me and keeps this issue alive for me is the one that made it on the news about the father having to sell his 7-year-old as a bride. Yeah. Because he couldn't stand to watch her starve to death if he didn't do that. Mm. And he knew it was wrong. And, you know, but his pain was such that he didn't know what else to do. And I just feel like there has to be a better way for our country to get itself out of conflict and not just leave a mess where, you know, those who were never connected to this and never responsible for it end up paying the biggest price for it. So that's something that weighs really heavily on me and I think is a global justice issue in the sense of while our country is becoming very internally focused, we need to remember who we are in the world and our responsibility for each other. And we've been largely responsible for creating this image that, you know, we can help, we can be part of your lives, we can help you have a better life. And I don't think we can just drop the ball now and not help people.
So that's part of the priorities for the coming year for Global Justice Institute?
It's certainly something I'm exploring. I don't know where I'll end up with it, if I'll make any progress, but I'm certainly keeping it on the front burner.
What has been the most difficult for you personally, during this pandemic?
Well, I think very, very personally, two things. One is that, like you, my spouse is ill and was ill prior to the pandemic, but requires a great deal of care. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic has only heightened the level of care that I need to provide for her, because obviously I have to protect her in mm-hmm. every way mm-hmm. that I can. And I've been criticized for, you know, like the marches that were in the street around all the racial injustice. The best I could do was go and stand on the street as a witness. I didn't feel I could be in the march because people were not masked always. And mm-hmm. I just felt like I couldn't risk bringing that home to her. And and so, you know, I'm sorry for that failure, but I did the best I could do. And certainly I didn't let up calling attention to it or preaching about it or that kind of thing. But I felt that I had to protect her. So that was hard. And then I think the other thing that's been personally challenging to me is, and I think we probably share this, you know, my life is the church, and I'm watching, you know, having to give in and close Sunday worship. Oddly, while the city asked us to keep open the pantry and the shelter, but close the doors to the church, that was heartbreaking for me, you know, and just this constant struggle of trying to figure out how is the church going to survive, not as what it was, I don't mean that, but how do we press forward? How do we change? How do we accommodate? How do we become a church that's viable for people in this situation? So if that feels personally to me, personal to me, because that's my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time we do this, every year, I am just blown away by how much you're doing, where the people are that you're reaching out to. And that's the reason that I always want you to tell people how they can follow your work and how they can support the Global Justice Institute.
Thank you for that. You can find information on the Global Justice Institute at www.globaljusticeinstitute.org. Or you can email me at revpat@globaljusticeinstitute.org, and I'd be happy to share any information with you.
The Reverend Elder Pat Bumgardner is the longtime senior pastor of the Metropolitan Community Church of New York and executive director of the Global Justice Institute. Every time we have a conversation, I feel better about the world. I am always thankful for what you are doing, and it always makes me want to be more like you. Pat, thank you as always for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air, and we are very grateful. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. We need one another. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.